Speakeasy.
Words.
Lingo.
Speakeasy.
Language.
Speakeasy on ABC Radio Perth.
Welcome and let's step into the speakeasy. We're joined by Daniel Midgley, linguist and podcaster from Talk the Talk. Daniel, should I shake your hand? We've been talking about handshakes this morning.
Handshakes are really interesting. There's a lot we can say about handshakes.
Yeah?
Well, it belongs to a kind of a social linguistic study called kinesics, where we're looking at where we stand. Like right now, there's a big old desk between us, right? I'm feeling like there's a
literally,
bit of,
not metaphorically, there is a big desk between us.
And metaphorically, I'm feeling a bit of a wall there. You guys are a little bit remote. It was much better when Paula was on this side of the desk last week. I felt like there was. But, you know, handshaking is part of that. There's an intimacy involved in touching someone. Mm. And maybe a chemical transfer as well. Ew.
I think it's a weird custom when you think about it.
It's also
you're very exposed.
It's an old custom as well. There are lots of stories about how handshakes got started. Apparently, I'm not sure I believe them. One is that the world was a dangerous place, and so you, by holding someone's hand, you could make sure that there wasn't a weapon in it. Or you would, you know, pump their arm up and down to try to dislodge any weapons up their sleeve in case they were, you know.
But imagine if the custom was to just gently place your palm on someone's heart.
Yeah, to see if they're alive.
That's how you greeted someone. If that's what you had to do.
Yeah.
That's how weird I see the handshake.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, get your hand off me, man.
You ever had someone who insists on gripping your hand and then putting their hand on top?
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a classic move.
Classic move. It's a power thing, isn't it?
Absolutely
so,
it is.
A sociolinguistic professor of mine told a story about how he brought his crazy brother to church once, and the pastor was a guy who did the top hand thing.
Oh.
So he meets the crazy brother, shakes his hand, but puts the hand on top. And so the crazy brother just licks the back of the pastor's hand.
Really? Well, that's a statement.
Never tried that again.
Mark has called in, and just talking handshakes before we get on to baby talk. Mm. Mark called in and says he hates what he calls the limp dishcloth handshake. Are they disinterested?
I sometimes worry that I'm a bit limpy dishcloth.
Would you rather go limpy dishcloth or be accused of being the overhand power handshake? Mm. Which is worse?
I'm always worried that, you know, in case my fingernails might, because my fingernails aren't that long, but they're strong. Mm. And I don't want to squeeze too hard in case I hurt someone.
And there's also the crush. Right.
Yeah.
If you're a limp dishclother or you're a crusher, it's just you're not doing it right. You're not going into it with the right kind of sensitivity. It takes mutual effort here, people. I just wanted to say about shaking someone's hand when you disagree with them. There's been some talk about civility.
Yes.
Right. I hate civility.
Okay.
I think it's a trap because people on the right can get up and say anything, but if somebody on the left just responds the wrong way by maybe not shaking their hand or something, then they're being uncivil. And then people treat that like it's the same thing. It's a double standard that you can never win. They get to do anything. Mm. And then the non-hateful people get judged for doing anything. So I'll tell you what, if somebody's encouraging racism and discrimination, the problem is them. Mm. The problem is not how I shake their hand or whether I do or don't.
Okay, yep.
Let's focus on the weather.
Yeah, okay. Good point, Daniel Midgley.
Thank you. Traffic news for you. Emergency works, Manning Road. The right lanes are blocked in both directions between Bungaree Road and Centenary Ave in Wilson. Traffic management on site, approach with caution. What did you think of the two examples of adults still using baby talk that Paula and I came up with, Daniel? The nine eyes and the blankie.
I do like my blankie.
The blankie. Love it. I love how baby words get into the adult lexicon. In your experience, have you talked to children using baby talk or have you tried to avoid it?
Look, you don't want to follow my example because one of my daughter's first words was Louis, the home delivery Chinese guy. But when it comes to using baby...
That's an awfully long phrase.
But I think one of the first words we taught our kids was ta.
Yeah.
And that's introducing the idea of thank you, I guess. And it's one syllable and it's nice and short and easy to say.
Absolutely. Talked to my children in baby talk. I didn't realise there was a movement to try and not talk to little ones with baby talk. It just seemed natural to me. So the great irony now is that they talk to me with baby talk. So I don't understand what they're saying.
You know, baby talk is no big deal. I just remembered another word that has worked its way into the lexicon from baby talk, and it's tummy.
Yes.
It's a child's impersonation of saying stomach. You drop the S and you've got tummock, and then you just say the E on the end, tummy.
Here's a difficult one. Maybe it's not difficult for you, Daniel. What about non-English baby talk words that we use in English?
Oh, now I can't.
That is very. I'm going to ask everybody that question.
Oh, gosh, that's a good one. I can't think of any, but I would
be
interested.
There would have to be a few out there.
I would love to hear from our non-English speaking listeners on what baby talk is like in your language. But you mentioned, Peter, that a bit of a movement to drop baby talk, and I hope that people won't do that.
Why?
Because baby talk helps.
Oh, okay.
It helps kids. Now, imagine I'm watching my young one. She's about, oh my gosh, she's coming up on 2 years now, and the words are coming thick and fast. I try to keep track. I've got this spreadsheet on my phone.
Speaking like a true linguist.
A linguist father spreadsheet of baby words.
Children are data. But I've had to open that spreadsheet about 10 times a day because she's piling on words at this stage. It's almost too fast for me to keep track.
What would be the theory in eliminating baby talk then, Daniel?
People think that if you talk to kids like babies, then they'll be stupid or something. I've actually had people say, you know, I notice how you talk to your kids like adults, and I really admire that. You know, but that's fine. But language is hard. Okay, language is really hard. So, for example, the other day we were coming back from the grocery store and she wanted to go for a walk. She wanted to suddenly go for a walk, right? So, okay, these groceries are heavy. I'm going to put them down. And then we walked down the laneway. And then I said, okay, well, we have to go home now. We have to go back. So she heard me say back, and she thought, okay. So she started walking backwards the way we'd come. And I just thought, man, language is hard.
It is.
Can I ask you then, does the onomatopoeia have any basis in baby talk?
That's a very big word for before 7 o'clock.
You're going to have to explain that one, Peter.
So, for example, choo-choo, the sound of a train.
Yep.
Or, you know, when you say bang, for example, or whatever it might be, that is a quick way for kids to learn, I would have thought.
That's a really good example. And anecdotally, my daughter's first words were, oof.
Yeah, okay, there we go. Yeah, of course.
That was the first word. And oof, woof was, you know, we tried dog, but woof, woof was, and choo-choo and these words. She seems to prefer them to the conventional words.
Well, they make sense.
So a lot of kids would call the dog woof.
A woof, yep.
Rather than a dog, wouldn't they?
Yeah, we gave up and called it the woof. So I'm looking at a new study from the University of Edinburgh from Mitsuko Ota, and they took a look at the kind of language that babies got, and then they took a look at, later on, how well they learned language, how fast they acquired vocabulary, and they found that some kids got things like ducky and horsey,
yes,
where you put an E on the end, and also choo-choo, all right? And that's not so much onomatopoeia, but duplicated things. Nine eyes.
Yeah, because electric trains don't go choo-choo anymore. But hey, sorry. I'm just getting...
Dang.
Yeah.
They found that the kids that got the baby talk did a lot better.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I'm thinking, why would that be? Well, take a look at the kinds of words that you put E on. There's ducky, horsey, anything else?
Chalky. I want a chalky.
What are those things?
Oh, sorry, I'm just obsessed with food.
this morning, isn't it? Those things are nouns.
Yeah.
This is an important syntactic cue for kids. It tells them about the kinds of objects. Because think about it. Adult speech just comes out in one big long stream. I'm talking right now, but I'm not putting spaces between my words. And we don't do that for kids either. We just do it in one big long stream. And this child has to somehow fish something out of the stream. And there are a couple of ways to do it. If it's got an E on the end and you start noticing that E marks the entities in the sentence, hey, that's what you want to grip onto, right? Forget about prepositions or function words like back or on. Go for the nouns, right? Go for the verbs. And also, the other thing, reduplication like choo-choo. When you hear something twice, I can grab onto that, right? It's not just it's going past. It's like, oh, you said that, and then you said it again, so it must have been purposeful.
So baby words that you still use as an adult, that is what I've asked you this morning, and there's some really good responses. I love this one from Gary, Daniel. He says, I'm in my 60s, and if I hit my thumb with a hammer, I still yell, hurties. He says that's it is brilliant. A lot better than some alternatives.
Oh, well done.
Hurties. another one here, another text. Is TAR short for thanks a lot?
Okay. I'm beginning to think that it is. I'll need to check that one out. I'm not totally sure, although it's a very good candidate. Can we go on?
Yes, we can. I'll just read this one from Beck. I like this one. When you have an ouchie or you get a boo-boo.
Oh. Yes.
Todd does appear to be a child's impersonation of thanks.
Okay.
So but I'm not sure about ta-ta, like farewell.
No,
sure
that's that different.
It is different, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems to be. Mm. I love this one as well. Jim Jams or Jammies, a favourite baby words in our family. And this texter also says, love Daniel Midgley, spot on your show. We love him too.
Oh, thanks very much.
So do you get in your jammies with your blankie?
I do.
And have a bicky?
And notice what happens, you know, even when you use these words with adults, you sort of, you're doing something different, right?
Yeah.
This is not how you speak to everyone. This is how you speak with people you're intimate with.
Mm.
And, you know, putting on our verbal pajamas.
Wait, verbal pajamas is a good word, because I know that if I'm cooking with the bloke in the kitchen, it's different if I say, just chuck me a potato, or if I say, hey, I want some taties. You know, it's something very different going on in that dynamic, and it just shows what mood we're in at the time.
This has a name, this kind of speech. It's sometimes called child register, but sometimes called child-directed speech. It used to be called motherese. I don't think that's a very good name because
I don't like it,
fathers do it too.
Exactly. Mm. Come on.
Everybody does it.
So I asked the question about whether in English we use baby words from another language.
Mm.
And there is the possibility, oops-a-daisy, oops-a-la in German.
That's an interesting bit of crossover there.
Yeah, so,
And then we got oopsie after that. I really like that idea.
Yeah, my little daughter didn't learn oops, but she did learn oopsie.
Yeah?
Even though it's two syllables, you think that'd be harder.
Craig is in Guelph. He says, it drives my missus crazy when my parents come over and I say, hello, mummy. Hello, daddy. So he continues to do it every time, I'm sure.
Even mummy and daddy, like, we don't raise our babies to say mother and father unless we're of a different age and a socioeconomic circumstance. We say mum, dad, mummy, daddy.
Wouldn't it just be odd to have a 3-year-old saying, I have grazed my knee, mother?
And it's like, no, you say, mummy, I had an oopsie and now I've got a boo-boo.
I think I have seen a 3-year-old talk like that to his mother, and it might have been in one of those horror films. We know how they turned out.
It's creepy, right?
Yeah, it is just a little bit creepy.
Now, I do have to say that not every culture uses child-directed language. There are some places, like I think some parts of Maori culture and Quechua-speaking culture, where they don't talk to kids. They don't talk to kids until the kids can basically talk. It's like, when you learn to talk, then I'll talk to you. Then you'll be worth talking to. It doesn't seem to hamper their learning, though, because they seem to speak like this to each other. They hear lots of child-directed speech among other kids. So that's where they do the bulk of their learning. But in most places, you do talk in a slightly slower way. You use exaggerated intonation. And you speak a little bit higher. Well, moms speak higher. Dads don't, experimentally.
Yeah.
It's weird.
What sort of barrier was the premise of children should be seen and not heard? Sort of barrier on learning was that, do you think?
Well, children still heard language from someone. And also, there was this study that showed, well, this was a while ago, that children from upper, more affluent households were hearing more words, and so they were learning language better. People even started hearing about a 30 million word gap. You might have heard that that gap was a thing. But now we know a little bit more. And now it seems that kids who hear more words don't automatically learn language better. Instead, what seems to happen is the kids that got more conversational turns, more backs and forths, those were the ones that learned language better.
So, Daniel, I guess when people are concerned about only teaching kids, you know, baby language, there comes to a point where you have to transition out of it. So that transition goes quite smoothly, I'm assuming, even if you're using baby language?
People do just seem to age out of it. Kids stop using it because they feel it's babyish, or they may complain if you start using baby language with them. And adults seem to transition out of it pretty normally as they have greater expectations for their growing children. But, you know, if you don't like baby talk, get over it. It helps kids. There is no reason not to use it. And it's fun and it's kind of intimate and it's a way to be close.
And Kaz suggests, what about the old cuddle-wuddle?
Oh, okay.
Come here, give me a cuddle-wuddle. We actually still use, I know this is, well, it's only somewhat related, but when your kids invent names for certain things as well. Uh-huh. So we still use them as adults, and I know that's a bit of nostalgia for us as well.
Yeah.
So, for example, in our family, my middle daughter couldn't say apple, so to this day we sometimes call the apple an Uckabee. For some reason, she could say an Uckabee. And everyone's got these stories, I know, but for some reason also she couldn't get rainbow. So in substitute for rainbow, Diddy Mau Mau, which is a really cool sounding thing. A Diddy Mau Mau. Look, mummy, Diddy Mau Mau.
Well, we still use the term hicknick instead of picnic in our family because sometimes it kind of makes sense.
We talk about roatsies instead of horsies because my sister Diane always said roatsies.
Okay. See, it all makes sense. Whatever helps you communicate, isn't it, Daniel Midgley?
I think that might be something for another show.
I think so. Good on you, Daniel.